This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
Griffin looking, down three into Durant. Durant with one dribble, gets off a three and missed it at the horn. The Milwaukee Bucks blow a 21-point lead, but hang on and rally, and they're in the series.
Hour number two, Barton Hahn, ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, and your smart speaker. Presented by Progressive Insurance, and we're going to head right to the Goodyear Hotline, brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. With Bart Scott, I'm Bob Wischusen, in for Alan Hahn. And PJ Carlissimo, who's covering the NBA playoffs, not only the games he is calling on ESPN Radio, but the games he's not calling. You know he's watching all of them. And, Coach, it is good to have you. Thanks for spending some time with us. We appreciate it.
Happy to be with you guys, Bob.
Hey, real quick, I let off the show saying this. You tell me fair or unfair. The Bucks were a team yesterday that won a game, and in winning a game, never did anything more to convince me that they have no chance in the series of any other team I think I've ever seen win a playoff game. Is that fair or unfair to how the Bucks played last night?
I'm going to go a little unfair only because I thought defensively they did good things and they found a way to win. I thought they could win the game. If you'd told me they were going to score 86 points again, then I would have bet an awful lot of money. There was no way that was going to happen. I mean, they scored 86 and got beat by almost 40 in game two, and they scored 86 against, you know, the number two, their number one, number two scoring team in the league, and they found a way to win. So that was impressive. I thought there were some good signs. Giannis early looked like what I would like him to be more. I mean, taking the ball to the rim, dunking on people, being physical. And then he drifted back into his three-point. He's got that love affair with three-point shooting that I'm assuming drives Bud nuts, but I don't know that, and Bud's not going to say that. But it's unbelievable. He's shooting almost 70%, I think, inside the arc, and he's like, I don't know what, 4 for 30-something outside. You're shooting threes. Chris Middleton was Chris Middleton, which was really nice to see. And, you know, with the 35 points, he got 15 rebounds. I mean, he had that little shootout with KD going there for a couple minutes down the stretch in the fourth quarter that was really good to watch. And I thought kind of lost in the shuffle, Brooke Lopez blocks six shots, five of them in the second half. Really a factor. And he affected that Bruce Brown shot at the end, which, that whole play kind of got sideways when they messed up the inbounds pass and they looked like they were going to save it, and God knows what happened there. I'm sure that's going to drive Steve Nash nuts, that one. But I think they can take a deep breath now. Do I love their chances? No, but I'll tell you what. It's when you're down 2-0, you can't look ahead and say we got to win 4 out of 5, because if you think that way, you got no shot whatsoever. You just win a game and let's play another one. If they would make some shots, they can't make a shot. Middleton was 3 for 6, I believe, from the three-point line. The rest of the team was 3 for 25. So, I mean, they can't win. They got to score 110 or 115, which usually for them is no problem at all. But they are really struggling with Brooklyn's defense, and I'm just praying. We're going to be back there. Breeny's got it on ABC, and we'll be there, Sean Kelly and myself, Sunday afternoon. So I'm hoping Game 4 is going to feature a little bit more offense than we saw last night.
And Bruce Brown forgot what name was on the back of his jersey. It wasn't Durant or wasn't Irving. Because not even the one that Brooke altered. It's the floater that he pulled up short when he was trying to play hero ball instead of finding one of the guys that are paid to make those type of shots. And I know you got to dare to be great, but he dared and he bet on himself when he shouldn't have. But, you know, what's crazy? When I watch this game and tonight I'll watch Ben Simmons play, to me, Giannis and Ben Simmons are the most frustrating superstars to watch, is because you would think after all the time that they've spent in the NBA that they would be able to develop a consistent 18-footer or some type of floater or some type of shot when they're denied access to the rim. And it's frustrating to me that if they want to be great players and they want to be considered one of the great players, that they wouldn't put the time and the work in to consistently be able to shoot that shot.
Bart, I'm with you. The thing that amazed me getting ready for the playoffs, you know, you start reading all the stats and everything. I had forgotten. I think this is Giannis's 8th year in the league.
Wow.
But from year 2 through year 6, He shot over 70%, over 72% from the free throw line. One of them, he was like at 77%, like 5 years in a row. And then he goes back to 63% yesterday from, last year from the free throw line. And he's in the mid-60s this year. And now he can't even shoot in the mid-60s in the playoffs. I'm baffled. Sometimes he shoots. We had that one stretch. Was it the first time last night? The first shot from the free throw line went under the rim. The second one was an air ball. And I'm going, this is a two-time MVP.
Yeah.
And at times his stroke looks good. I can't figure it out. Obviously, there's a lot of mental there. He should have played football, seriously. he had to be a safety or something like that where he doesn't have to get too involved with the ball other than to do an interception because it's to shoot it, but he doesn't seem to have developed any kind of reliable shot.
He got the Marquez Folks type of syndrome or something. Sometimes I blink and I close my eyes, and if I squint a little bit, I think I'm watching Russell Westbrook without the assist. And it's like, man, like if you want to be a great player, that's what I love about LeBron. LeBron came in, he didn't have a great shot, right? But every year he plugged up holes in his game. And I just don't understand why Ben Simmons and why Giannis can't close the holes and plug the holes in their game. And to me, I think that you can't really consistently win with those guys because they alter the way that teams play you. And tonight we'll watch Joel Embiid try and put the team on his back, but you're going to watch Ben just turn down shot after shot after shot, that if he consistently learned how to do that and be able to make those type of shots, it'll make life easier for everybody because now you're defending five instead of four.
I'm with you, especially for Doc Rivers or Mike Budenholzer. It's, you know, and it's true, Bart. You say it. You know that from all the years playing professionally. The best guys, Michael went back. LeBron goes back. Those guys in the summer, KD still does it. I was lucky enough to be with KD when he was a rookie in Seattle. They work on parts of their game, and they come back better players. And, you know, lesser players – you know, I do whatever they do in the summer. I don't know what. And they come back and go, how'd this guy get better? I mean, it's like there's no secret. Kobe, Michael,
Julius Randle,
LeBron, KD, that's what they do in the offseason. They work on their games and they come back better.
PJ, when you watch Donovan Mitchell, do you see like a Kyrie, KD, LeBron, Steph Curry level player that we're just not talking about enough yet? Or does he need to do a little more and maybe Utah get to the finals and win a championship before we have to start talking about him on the level with those guys?
There's no question Bobby's got the ability. But, no, what separates those guys, the guys you named, were just what you just said. They learn to win in normal years, we say, in April, May, and June. This year it's in May, June, and July. Donovan was spectacular in the bubble last year. He's been close to that starting out this year. But, no, Utah's got to win. He's got to take him to a finals or he's got to win a championship because that's what – I mean, that's how you define him. I mean, you can be a superstar in this league, and but you have to do it. Even if your team doesn't win it, you have to be really good, and you're going to get your team to conference finals, and, you know, you got to do stuff. When we started talking about Kawhi was when they won in 14 in San Antonio, and then he win the championship up in Toronto. I mean, come on. If you want to be in that level or, you know, considered with those guys, you have to win in the playoffs. He's knocking on the door. No one is going to be surprised if he does it this year. And then we will talk about him a little bit differently because what he does is incredible. But they're two games into the conference semifinals. They got a long way to go. I would not bet against him, but he may be one that breaks the door down. That's going to happen in the future with Luka Doncic. It's going to happen with Trae Young, I think, in the future also. But they got to do it. I mean, it's asking a lot from guys as young as they are and as spectacular as they are. But it's about winning. It's about the team winning.
Hey, 24 years old, I think he'll be elevated to another level as far as in the eyes of the casual fan. Last year, outdueled by Jamal Murray, who I think we kind of forget about because he's not in the postseason.
Amen.
So he's going to get elevated above, you know, Jamal Murray when Jamal Murray was able to outduel him and outshine him last year. But in watching this series, though, I just don't understand how he's able to get everything that he wants when he's going against two of the best wing defenders in the game. Like, if you're Tyronn Lue, what's the adjustment to say, hey, if we're going to lose, we're not going to lose, you know, by Donovan Mitchell going for 30, 40 points. We're going to make somebody else beat us. What's the adjustment? Because they were going underneath the pick and roll, and he was more than willing to be able to shoot over the top.
Yeah, boy, they can mix that up, but it's hard to if you want to double him, what's really difficult about the team that Dennis Lindsay and Quinn Snyder's put together, man, they have some people who can just light you up with that three ball from outside, and Royce or Ingles or Clarkson coming off the bench. I mean, forget about it. They're so good that you're really scared to leave and put the other guy on you. And you're kind of caught in between. I agree with you. He keeps putting up 40s and 45s. There's no question. When they can in pick and rolls, when they can in half-court offense, they've got to double him. They got to get the ball out of his hand. But in transition and when they're running off misses or turnovers, there's not much they can do. I mean, he in the open floor with his ability to finish and pull up and shoot it, I mean, it's like Trae Young. When those guys are open floor, there's not much you can do. Maybe you can slow them down in the half court and then take your chances with the other people. But Utah's supporting cast, they've really done a nice job building that team this year. They can hurt you, and I'm impressed they're doing this without Mike Conley. Mike Conley's really important to them, and they found a way to win a couple games, admittedly at home, but still, that's two huge wins for them without Mike Conley.
PJ, thanks a million for the time. I'll be fascinated to be, you know, right there with you as well when we see if the Hawks can hold serve at home and Trae Young can keep this rolling too, because he's been a ton of fun to watch and always a ton of fun to talk to you. Thanks.
Always smarter after talking to you.
Great being with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Coach.
You gave me some good bar talk to go and say like I'm an expert.
PJ Carlesimo joins us and gives us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. All right, real quick before we get back to the phones, college football playoff. The proposal is going to be delivered to the larger deliberative body. And there's a couple of, I think everybody thinks, you know, 12-team playoff, six automatic qualifiers. It's not automatic qualifiers. I think there are a couple of things here that people don't quite understand, a couple of little curveballs that are in this proposal, which I actually think makes the proposal better.
The nuance.
But it's a 12-team playoff system. The six highest-ranked conference champions are going to go, but it doesn't automatically mean you get in. If, like, they have put kind of a caveat in there where, let's say, just for the sake of argument, you know, like, I'll pick my school, a Boston College, in their division in the ACC is unranked. It's a lousy division. They make it to the ACC championship game and they upset Clemson. They don't get an automatic bid to the college football playoff, as I'm reading this proposal, which I think is a good way to go. The other little curveball is Notre Dame. Notre Dame cannot be seeded higher than fifth. Even if they're the number one team in the country, they can't be higher than fifth because they can't get one of those bids to the top four seeds because they don't play in a conference championship game because they're not in a conference. That might seem like it's a handicap for them. It's not, I don't think, because the first round of this proposal – they will, if they're the number one team in the country, play like the number 12 seed at home in December. They'll play them in Notre Dame Stadium on their home field in December. That might be a better scenario than having to play in a conference championship game. But right. Overall, your thoughts about expanding to 12 and what this now means to college football?
I think it was only right because we had so many of the usual suspects every year, and I think it really alienates a lot of fan bases. And I don't know how they're going to do it, if they're going to use some of the other bowl games and make them more important and make them part of the playoff series. That way that, you know, everybody can still get their money. And now you give guys more of an incentive to saying, hey, man, I may be a 10th seed or 11th seed, but I still got opportunity to win a national championship. So maybe I'll stay on board and not start preparing for the NFL draft.
No question.
And start leaving.
I told you, I call some of those games. Yes. Well, all of a sudden you get the Cotton Bowl and like seven guys that are going to go to the draft from Michigan all bail.
Right.
It really takes a big bite out of the enthusiasm for that game.
Because the championship is something real.
Yes.
Like, man, I got an opportunity and maybe I can be one of these Cinderella stories like we see at the NCAA tournament. And you be able to root, and you root for – everybody loves an underdog story. And it's going to be guys that's going to upset one, maybe two, and you get excited. And, you know, it's able to kind of captivate the hearts and minds of the country. And also, I'm so tired of the teams getting left out that's undefeated, but they don't play in a big enough schedule, and we have to leave it up to everybody to decide, are they deserving of it? Where you think about UCF, you think about Cincinnati in recent years, teams that have outstanding regular season and may not be the competition, but you only can play who you can play. It gives them opportunity to say, you know what, all right, you think you're ready for the big dogs? Either you go in there and you show us that you belong, or you get spanked, but you can't go and pout and say, we didn't get an opportunity.
This will now decide the national championship for college football definitively on the field.
Yeah, and then what
I think is the point.
And what I love, too, is any given Sunday, right?
Right.
Or any given Saturday.
It's like the NCAA tournament for basketball. Like, we spend one night in the NCAA tournament on Selection Sunday talking about the five or six bubble teams that got left out and how maybe they got screwed.
Yeah.
But by Monday, that's over.
Yeah.
Because you know what? We've got 68 teams in the tournament. You're 69th. Yeah. We're not going to feel that bad for you. I think this now gets to the point where if you're the 13th best college football team and you didn't get in, we'll talk about you on Selection Sunday.
Yeah, but it's a wrap.
But it's a wrap.
Yeah.
We'll
but it'd be funny to see who's going to be the Virginia for the NFL, college playoff, right? Who's going to be that high seed that gets bounced by? Like, they got bounced by who? Air Force? Like, are you kidding me?
Well,
they lost to Air Force?
Like you said, this will now give the Boise's, the UCFs, the teams that have gotten to those, you know, New Year's Six games.
TCU.
Right, but have not gotten into the playoff.
Right.
And they've won those New Year's Six games, which obviously, you know, kind of opens the debate of, well, what if they had been in the playoff? The caveat or the out that anybody from a Power Five league always throws out there, well, if you're Auburn, if you're Oklahoma, you're not in the playoff. Like, what do you care? They weren't motivated. These other teams really come in wanting to prove something. Well, now all the motivation is going to be there for the opponent of those teams.
Yeah.
Now we get the true litmus test.
Oh, yeah. And when you talk about a team that's supposed to win opposed to a team that's there and it has no expectation, they play loose. You got reverses. You got trick plays, fumble rooskies, fake punts. And then it's like one of these frenetic games. Usually the national championship games, a lot of times the main event usually disappoints. But the road to the main event is usually like checkered in all kind of subplots.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We want to touch on the college football playoff proposal. I think we both like it, and obviously we got the NBA we're talking a ton about as well. So let's get back to the phones, get a few more calls in. Val in the Bronx has been very patient. He joins us next
year. What up, Val?
On ESPN Radio.
You coming up to Harlem, baby?
Come on, from the Bronx, brother. Get it right, boy. You my big brother. Now, don't do me that.
But listen, I get to the Bronx. Listen, I'm going to stop and get us a Red Rooster. I'm going to bring it up to the Bronx. I'm delivering. I'm your Uber. I'm your Uber Eats, baby.
Can't complain. Urge, you can't complain. Can't complain. I got 2 points that I want to make to you this afternoon, gentlemen. 2 points, all right? First one, and I think I spoke to you before about this, Bart. It was a while back during the regular season. It might have been after, I think, the Nets and the Bucks played late in the season and the Bucks won.
Yeah.
And when we spoke before, I don't know if it was you. I can't remember. But I remember saying it to somebody because I got on that day. And me personally, I don't think that, and I'm not saying, you know, you guys have been bashing him. Like, it sounds like, it can sound.
Val, it sounds like you're on a flip phone. You got to get to your point here. Get to it.
All right. Giannis and KD. The difference between the two of them, Giannis could never be KD, and that's what's going to hurt him later on. I actually had an argument with a friend of my daughter's, and we were actually I was saying to him, if you could pick one of the two guys to start a team, which would you go with? And I actually thought he would say KD, but the kid said Giannis, and the only reason why he did it was because of the age difference, because he thinks Giannis can last longer than KD would. But when you look at it, later on, exactly what you said, Bart, is what's going to end up happening in Milwaukee. Giannis is going to end up being a hindrance to them going as far as they want to. Because once you get past that athleticism, once he gets to a certain age, and he can't leap the way that he does now, his game is not KD's. KD can – that's why KD –
anybody that would pick Giannis over KD doesn't want to win a championship.
Well, but you got to understand, like, this kid has seen him win two MVPs. So, like, he's blinded by, like, oh, he must be the best player 2 years in a row. And if you haven't seen KD in 18 months, you don't know what he was before because you really didn't watch him as a kid, then you can understand it's a generational type of thing, right? You know, Giannis is going to end up being Blake Griffin – like Blake Griffin is after the injuries, but he doesn't even have the skill set of Blake Griffin to be able to shoot threes and be able to shoot 18-footers.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that's why he had to move on from Westbrook.
I think the fact that he's a two-time MVP and the fact that he is a max contract guy plays into your point earlier. Why are you not a better shooter? Why are you not a better free throw shooter? Why are you not a better perimeter shooter? Well, what is all of the reinforcement that a guy like Giannis has gotten in terms of the money he's been paid and the postseason awards or quote-unquote regular season awards he's been given? Everything that we say to Giannis during the regular season, you're the MVP.
He's been
coddled.
You're
the best player in this league.
He's been
A max player. Here's $250 million.
He's got rewarded for
If you get all that, what, do you think you now have to have a 17, 18, 19-foot jump shot?
But let me tell you something.
But to win a championship, I think we're seeing he does.
Let me tell you something. The great players are self-motivated. They don't believe all the fluff people patting them on the back. They're competing with themselves. It's them against them. And he knows in his heart of hearts that he could be better. But if he's getting worse, that means he's complacent. So if he's complacent, then I don't know if I want to build around a star like that. He's a good player. He'll never be a superstar. I don't care how many MVPs he wins, because the MVP is a regular season award. You make your name in the regular season. You make your fame in the postseason. He'll be one of these guys that we say, hey, had a great career, didn't win a championship. And he's going to be one of the biggest reasons why they'd win a championship, because he never evolved and evolved his game. I mean, we just watched Julius Randle. Julius Randle take his game to another level. You mean to tell me somebody that's supposed to be the face of a franchise, which Julius Randle isn't yet, and a guy like Giannis is the face of the franchise, you can't put in the work to get a damn jump shot, and this is what you are paid to do? You're getting paid more than anybody to do it?
More calls, audio files coming up after Bart tells you about Home Depot.
What? Yep. The Home Depot? I love me the Home Depot. And guess what? Father's Day is coming around this year. Make Dad's Day with gifts from the Home Depot. Save on all the best ideas by shopping in-store or on the app. Choose from innovative tools, top-rated grills, or even the latest smart cameras and devices for your home. Because Dad loves new gear and new gadgets. The best gifts for dads and you'll find them at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See stores and details. Restrictions apply. Back after this. Are we doing audio files? Audio files.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bart and Han.
Breaking news, it's now official. The Tennessee Titans get wideout Julio Jones in a trade with the Falcons.
They're a team, a defense that's legit, run game that's ridiculous, and a quarterback that's been playing pretty much lights out last year and a half.
That was big news this past week. Bob Schusen in for Alan Han with Bart Scott. Of course, it's Bart and Han on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app and your smart speaker, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests appear on the Goodyear Hotline. And speaking of Progressive Insurance, with more than 30 unique coverage options available, Progressive knows small business. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Audio files time. Julio Jones, acquired now by Tennessee. How much does he have left in the tank? He talked about it.
At the end of the day, I believe in me. I know what I have in the tank. And we're talking about ages, 32. Like, I'm young. Like, in football, you can say it's old, but you either do it or you don't. This game don't change for me. I'm still fast and still strong. And to, you know, the games last year, I just, you know, had an issue where I didn't take enough time to heal up properly. But, you know, that was just my decision on going out there and just playing. There's no excuses, things like that. But I'll be ready to go. For those who are questioning my health and things like that, just stay tuned.
You know, I did the show Monday solo. You weren't here, and that was a huge topic. By the time you came in on Tuesday, we were off on Garrett Cole, and I never got your opinion.
Yeah.
Julio Jones to Tennessee does what for the Titans?
I think it's a lateral move. I mean, Julio just came from a place where him and Calvin Ridley were putting up historical numbers. When you think about what they combined with, Matty Ice threw for almost 5,000 yards. And where did the Atlanta Falcons go? Okay. So when I look at the Tennessee Titans, I have no questions about what Julio is going to be able to do. I think he's made out of the same stuff that Larry Fitzgerald is made out of. I think he can be great well into his later years, which is 32. I think he's good to about 36 before he started to slow down and we start seeing him as Hines Ward, or we start seeing him in another role but still being effective, just not being able to dominate in long times. But for me, this doesn't put the Tennessee Titans over the hump. For me, this doesn't make them better than Baltimore, doesn't make them better than Bills, doesn't make them better than Cleveland, doesn't make them better than New England. It doesn't make them better to me. It puts them maybe right on par with the Miami Dolphins because they have to win one way. And I know they got Bud Dupree, but we're talking about a guy that wasn't a tremendous natural pass rusher. He benefited from having Watt, T.J. Watt on the other side, because before that, he wasn't putting up those type of sack numbers. You talk about the blitzing and the scheme and all that stuff coming off of ACL. So that's what they're depending on. And a guy with a bad back in college who we expect to get healthy when he becomes a professional, and Caleb Farley. So we don't know what they're going to be. So if you can't stop anybody, we just see Julio being able to stuff the stats, but I don't see them really being able to be put over the top.
Does it make you feel like our relationship has gone to a different place that we now agree so much?
Oh, well,
that I said a lot of the same stuff on Monday without you even realizing I said a lot of the same stuff on Monday?
Julio belonged to the Atlanta Falcons. He's in Tennessee. His name's Quintores. Mama named him Quintores. I'm calling him Quintores.
I think those who think they're getting the 1,500-yard Julio Jones, if he stays healthy, that's not how Tennessee plays.
Right.
Nor, let me ask you this, do you think getting Julio Jones, losing Corey Davis, replacing him with Julio Jones, who obviously Julio Jones is a better player than Corey Davis.
Of course.
There's no question. But they still are going, I think, to play fundamentally the same way.
Of course.
Offensive line, Derrick Henry.
Take shots.
Play action, take shots. So put an over-under, even in a 17-game season, how many yards do you think Julio Jones catches if he stays healthy for 17 games? What would be the number you'd put on it?
If Corey Davis put up 984, then I'm going to say that Quintores is going to probably put up maybe 1,100, but I think they won't be the same effective 1,100. I mean, they're going to wait, and teams are going to have to realize, okay, when we put that eighth man down in the box and we can only double either A.J. Brown or Julio, who do we do that to?
Yep.
And Ryan Tannehill is going to be good enough to put up a good ball, which they should win the 50-50 ball. But if you're behind, you're never going to be able to get teams desperate to come down there when you're trying to run the game out. So I just still think that it's a lateral move. I think if he would have went to the Rams, if he'd have went to a team that was balanced like San Francisco, I think then he puts them over the top tremendously. Even Baltimore, they got no balance over there. So they got to try and win like the Colts did.
Yep, I'm with you. I think it's I think it was blown out of proportion, the importance of getting Julio on that team. He's going to be really good, and I think they're going to be good. But I am on the same page as you are with, I think, people blowing out of proportion the significance of the trade. Sam Darnold was asked this week, quarterback of the Carolina Panthers now, why he hasn't been vaccinated yet.
Have you been vaccinated, and kind of where do you come down on that?
I haven't been vaccinated yet. Still got to think about all those certain things that go into it. Again, it's everyone's choice whether they want to get vaccinated or not. That's really all I got on it. I don't want to go too into detail, but yeah, I haven't been vaccinated yet.
I didn't know if you were sort of, you know, doing some more research on it, or like kind of how will you make an informed decision on that?
Yeah, I have been. For me, I don't, you know, I'm just staying by myself right now. You know, I don't have a family or anything like that. So, you know, again, there's a ton of different things that go into it. I'm going to evaluate that on my own and, you know, make the best decision that I feel like is, you know, again, the best for myself.
We talked about this yesterday. The theme continues with NFL players not in probably the numbers the NFL wants getting vaccinated.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have that, right, in all groups. Some people are going to be for, some people are going to be against it. Like, dude, you got mono, dude. Like, clearly, you know what I'm saying? You don't got good luck. I mean, that's like somebody asking that they got scabies or like, man, I got the measles. Like, bro, like, you got something that people know. You got the spinning bottle game disease, man. So if I was you, I'd make sure that, yeah, clearly you don't got good luck. But at least, I don't know. Like I said before, it's a personal decision that you have to make. And depending on how many guys get vaccinated, it determines how your organization and how the your workplace is able to operate.
I just think these teams need to bring more of these experts in to try and educate everyone that they possibly can so the questions can be asked and answered. Because if you got cancer, if you had a heart issue, if you broke your leg, if you got a concussion, the same doctor that is telling you to get vaccinated You would go to them for all of those issues, no questions asked, and whatever they said to do, you'd probably do. So get more of those people in to explain to the players the benefits of getting vaccinated for everybody involved.
I mean, to a certain extent, right? Because if you have a injury, you got some people that's going to get a second opinion that say you may not need surgery, right? Or say, hey, treatment could be able to do it. Just look at Carson Palmer when he could have got Tommy John and he decided not to because it had never been done before. So you're always going to have people that decide to do certain things. Like I said, I played with Ty Heap, and Ty Heap was a Mormon, and Ty Heap wouldn't even take Tylenol. So certain games where he could have been able to push through with you thinking about Toradol, he wouldn't take it, right? He didn't take Toradol, which is a painkiller, and he wouldn't take it. So certain games he missed that maybe I can muscle through because I was willing to take Toradol. I mean, you have this at all places, man. You have some people who don't vaccinate their kids for measles and mumps. I mean, come on. I remember back in the day, my cousin had the mumps. I thought he was the elephant man. You know what I mean? I would never want that. I mean, please give me that vaccination.
I don't know. I'm fat and I got five kids. The idea of going through life without Advil or Tylenol, like that's a nightmare I don't even want to try and confront. All right, Russell Wilson. He was asked, did he demand a trade? And if not, why not?
There's a lot of teams out there that people were saying that I was going to or would go to. I requested a trade. I did not request a trade. I've always wanted to play here. You know, and the reality is I think calls were getting thrown around and this and that. And I think that's just a reality. But I think at the end of the day, the real reality is that I'm here, and I'm here to win. And I'm here to win it all. There was a whole thing saying that I requested a trade, and that's just not true. You know, I didn't request a trade, you know. So I think everything kind of started from there. And then, obviously, tons of teams were calling. And I think that the reality was is that I didn't really want to go anywhere else. I wanted to play in Seattle. But if I had to go somewhere, these are the teams I would go to consider. At the end of the day, I have no trade clause, right? So I think, you know, I think for me, though – you know, I had a great conversation with Coach Carroll, you know, had a good, really great conversation with John, too. You know, and Coach Carroll and I spent a lot of time together one-on-one.
Please exit the building.
We're on the same page. You know, we're here to do what we're meant to do.
This is not a drill. Come on, man. You like, and we boo-booed a fool. Like, your agent out your agent, not your brother, your agent. Who you pay 3% for every $10 million you give him, you give him $300,000. Like, stop it, man. He made a list. Are you telling us that you didn't have partaken any of that in the list? If that was the case, you should have said, I have a no trade clause, whether they want to get rid of me or not. I'm here. So what the hell are you talking about? You made the list. You tried to power play. They called your bluff, and they told you we ain't doing nothing. You said, I'm tired of getting hit. Sierra don't want to do a concert in the fish market. She want to go do it in Vegas. She want to do it in Chicago, one of the big places. She don't want to do it here. Nobody's going to listen. Everybody sleep in the East Coast after 12 o'clock. Stop it, Russ.
All right. We have another second here to talk about another quarterback and his relationship with his new head coach, Sean McVay. Talking about the time he is spending and how much he is enjoying spending that time with Matthew Stafford.
I think I've been very happy. Everybody says, man, you just seem like you're in a better mood this offseason. I said, you're damn right I am. So this guy, he's a special guy. I think one of the best ways that I can describe him, when you hear people that have been around him, there's a known confidence where when he walks into a room, you always feel his presence, but he's got a great humility about himself. That everybody loves being around him, and he's one of those guys that I think is a true igniter. It makes everybody around him better. I feel like I've become a better coach in the few months that we've been able to spend together, and we're looking forward to doing a lot of good things together.
Now, McVay realized after saying that how much it sounded like, I really like the guy that I've got now as opposed to the guy I used to have.
Yeah, he was a bum.
Was it a shot at Jared Goff? Absolutely, but he backtracked.
You know, I hate that I even have to say this, but I think I made a comment earlier that was definitely taken out of context. I am very excited. I have been in a good mood because of the confidence I have in this team. But by no means is that a slight to anybody, you know, like Jared, who has done a phenomenal job for the last 4 years here. You know, I hated that I even have to address that, but I do think out of respect for him and all the good things he's done, I am in a good mood. But that doesn't mean it's not because we're working together or because of just Stafford exclusively. There's a lot of good things going on that I feel really good about and I'm confident about. So don't twist my words when I didn't say that.
We don't have to twist your words. The first thing you say is true. You're happier with Matthew Stafford than you are with Jared Goff. Because, by the way, if you weren't happier with Matthew Stafford than Jared Goff would still be your quarterback. You traded Jared Goff away and brought Matthew Stafford in because you wanted Matthew Stafford, because you know he's better than Jared Goff. Your actions speak louder than any words or words you have to backtrack from.
And you talk about the nonverbal communication, the smile on his face, his body language. Liar, liar, pants on fire. That's exactly what it is. And what he didn't want to do is have to get in some type of verbal war with Jared Goff when they went and they ran and told it to Jared Goff. So he put that disclaimer out there. But listen, if I was a genius or touted as a genius and I had all these ingenious plays and I had a quarterback that was too dumb to be able to figure it out and I had to make sure that I gave him the plays early so I can still talk to him through his headset to tell him what the hell to do, I would get frustrated too. It's cool to do it as a rookie. It's cool to do it as a second year. Dude, when you get into your fifth year, fourth year, I shouldn't be having to tell you what the hell to do. You holding us back. We're a Super Bowl caliber team with arguably the best defensive player to ever play the game, one of the best corners in the game, number one defense, great position skill players, and we can't overcome your mediocrity. Just think, last year was a real thing. Should we go with him or Woodward or Wooder, whatever his name is? But the team was better with him, and they were forced to play Jared Goff, and they had an early exit outside of Green Bay because he couldn't play well. I know he was injured, but they was hoping that he would stay injured and would be injured enough not to even have to suit up. So absolutely, you happy, man. Matthew Stafford, MVP. He's been held hostage out there with the dude that was biting kneecaps and all that stuff with the most dysfunctional organization in Detroit. And I'm so happy that he's got out of there, that he's got freed. Barry Sanders couldn't get free. Calvin Johnson couldn't get free. Matthew Stafford has got his freedom papers, and he's going to show everybody just how damn good he is.
Extra long audio files. That was fun. Back in a moment. Bart and Hahn, ESPN
audio
Radio,
movie,
ESPN
audio
Plus.
Movie.
Bart and Hahn.
ESPN Radio brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. And if you missed any portion of the show today, you can always find both hours of Bart and Hahn posted daily as a podcast, available wherever you listen to podcasts. It is Friday. You think the Yankees be playing tonight? They do not. That is a really weird scheduling anomaly. No Yankee game tonight. They got to sit now for a night before they play the Phillies in Philly, two games Saturday, Sunday, on Aroldis Chapman, blowing a chance for them to sweep the Twins.
You know, he didn't have enough stacky, tacky 2000 and on his nose to sweat. You know what I mean? But listen, they need to sit back. And everybody needs to watch the best pitcher in the game, arguably what you said, the best pitcher of all times. So why would you not give Jacob DeGrom the stage off to himself?
He's got it tonight against arguably the best team in baseball. It's DeGrom against the Padres tonight.
Ooh, Tatis. Will he do a major bat flip if he does that? And if he does that, does Peter Line go all polar bear? Don't you ever show up my guy.
Any chance you come in on Monday and it's 2-2 Nets Bucks? Any chance?
Nah, man. Barbecue chicken.
All right. On the road, that game for the Nets, Sunday afternoon. It'll be on ESPN Radio. PJ Carlissimo and Sean Kelly will have the call. Bart and Hahn will be back noon Eastern on Monday. See what happens with those Nets. Join us then.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Hahn podcast. You can listen live to Bart and Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN Plus. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.